Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. Normally, we have a special guest on. We've done that for the first 20 episodes, but today I just wanted to run through the 40 lessons in 40 years that I posted just recently in line with my 40th birthday. Not everyone wants to read a post like that, so I just thought I'd run through it on this podcast and have a little bit of a chat in not a lot more detail, because there are a few to get to, but just to expand on a couple of the points. So the first thing was, anyone who claims they never went through a losing apprenticeship early on is long odds on to be having you on. And what I mean by that is, some people purport to be experts who've never had a losing run of any kind. Well, from the people I've met, it's definitely a learning curve, and most people have gone through an apprenticeship of some kind where they don't do very well. They lose and they find out the reasons why they've lost, and they do actually learn from that. So pretty much everyone at some stage, normally early on in their career, have had a really bad patch or even extended patch where they haven't done well. But as I said before, you work out why that's happened, and then you add that to your knowledge, and from there you can develop into a winning punter. And number two is, betting with an edge offers superior returns to any other investment class. When you see a lot of investments of various kinds spruiked in the media, and if they can achieve a 10% annual return, that's seen as as an excellent performance. In the betting world, a 10% return is a reasonable month. So I just think, compared to other investment forms, which many of them are, it's basically just gambling, but in another name, that what's traditionally known as gambling, that offers better returns than you can get anywhere else. Number three was staking and money management are the most underrated aspects of gambling. I've spoken and written about that many times, but a lot of work goes in sometimes, people doing the form, not so much into how they're actually going to back that horse. We do mention a lot the balance between risk and reward, but people don't really put a lot of thought into the staking and also the money management, as in how they're going to cope during losing runs and also how they're going to stay controlled when they're on a really good winning run. Related to that is number four, and that's no one avoids drawdown, so why be surprised when you go through it? I've written an article that's quoting Mike Tyson saying, everyone's got a plan until they get hit in the head. It's the same with drawdown. People say that they'll stick with an approach despite a losing run, but when push comes to shove, many people pull the pin too early. There's no point having a betting bank unless you're going to use it. There's no point being surprised when you have a period of drawdown. It's inevitable. So don't fight it, just make sure you've got a money management plan that can withstand it. Number five was overestimating your edge can make an otherwise successful punter go bust. This isn't clear to everyone, but if we had Elihu Foistel on the podcast, I think it was our very first guest, but with him he explained that if you're betting in some form of Kelly criterion, which is the way a lot of people do it, and you think you may have a 5% edge on the market, if it's only 2.5%, well, despite having a winning approach, you'll end up going bust. So that's an important thing to be wary of, that even if you're profitable long term, you can actually wipe out your bank in the short term. Number six is, don't love a horse, love a price. We've often said that they can win without us. You let one go through to the keeper. That's something that a lot of people struggle with, where you've identified a horse that you're really confident will win, but it's a lot shorter than what you'd hope for. Most people back it anyway, but that's actually not the way to go about it if you're interested in long-term profits. Number seven, your best bet becomes a lay the moment they announce a change of riding instructions. This is just something that we experience over and over again. You might have done a speed map and you like a horse from an outside barrier. It's going to be up on pace where there might not be a lot of on the pace in a race where there might be not a lot of it, and unfortunately they announce that it's going to go back from a wide gate. Well, the moment they do that, they very, very, very rarely win. Number eight, if you don't have an intimate knowledge of the mathematics of punting, then you're betting on borrowed time. Not all of us enjoyed maths growing up, probably paid little attention to it in school, but maths, or punting, is mathematics, really. I think some people call it applied mathematics. It's probability, it's variance. Really, if you don't understand the mathematics of it all, then you really are going to struggle. Number nine, There are many different ways to win in this game, but professionals have plenty in common, such as work ethic, discipline and confidence. There are many different approaches, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for someone else. So there are many different ways of winning, but I think a common trait amongst the people I see that are successful would be a really strong work ethic, plenty of discipline and plenty of confidence. Lazy punters lose. Again, that's true in that you can't just do, a couple of minutes of form study. You think you've, found a horse that you like and expect to win. You might that time, but you won't long term. The same in shopping for the best odds. We bang on about that all the time. But if you think you can just grab a bet or, grab a selection, put your bet on at the first bookmaker that you see, and then you're going to do well, once again, you will in the short term, but in the long term, it's a little bit more difficult than that. Number 11 was be very clear on the difference between causation and correlation. Many people think that just because B happens after A, that it was actually caused by A. So I don't know if that's confused anyone, but just because something happens after another event doesn't mean that one caused the other. And there is a correlation where you could say in some ways that it's more about, not coincidence, probably a bit stronger than that, but just don't think that A necessarily caused B. There's a bit more to it. So if that happens a lot when you're looking at a lot of data or databases, that type of thing. Number 12 was always be prepared to pass on a winner if you've missed your price or have other serious doubts. That's related to an earlier one, but basically a lot of people fear the fact that the horse is going to win, and even though the it might be under their assessed price, they'll think that they've missed out. So if you have doubts, be prepared to pass on a winner, even write an almost bet down. And I think over the longer term, you'll find that those ones are not profitable. Yes, you will miss the occasional winner, but you're not going to actually miss any profits. 13 was jumps racing doesn't come close to paying its way and is irrelevant to all but a tiny minority. I don't meet anyone that really cares about jumps racing, to be honest. I think it's just a blast from the past. They're really poor betting mediums, betting funds the industry. I don't really buy into the animal rights side of things. I think they're just troublemakers in many ways, looking for something to squeal about. But really, as far as a betting medium goes, I think it's a waste of time. And from people talk through their pockets, I suppose, you look at the betting turnover, I think most punters agree. Number 14, inside barriers are, as a group, terrible betting propositions. This has been going on for years. I hope it continues for many more, because people do the form, they see barrier one or two or three, and they think that's perfect, it's drawn really well. Everyone thinks the same thing, so the value's gone. There's a lot more value in drawn out wide. And also, if you're drawn inside as a back marker, that can be a terrible spot for you. If you're drawn inside as a leader, you're pretty much forced to push up, and there might be horses coming from the outside to attack you. So just overall, inside barriers are not great betting propositions. That's just a very general thing, though. That's not to say we don't bet on horses drawn inside. It's more of a cross than a tick, put it that way. Number 15, most jockeys are inconsistent. It's just a matter of how much so. It's easy to think that the horses you back get terrible rides or have little luck in running, but that can happen across the board. Once again, you should be doing your videos and your stats to have some idea of who the better jockeys are. But I think the biggest difference between the best jockeys and the worst is their consistency. So I've said that most jockeys are inconsistent. That's true, but I think that the gap between the best and the worst of Oliver and Williams and Rod and Nashua Willer, those kind of guys, is far less than it is amongst some of the other guys who can turn in a great ride, but at other times they'll put in a shocker. Number 16, backmarkers suck. Unlucky horses tend to stay that way. Once again, it's not a new thing, but people fall in love with horses that storm home from the back, look ultra impressive, but they need a lot of luck for things to go their way. They're not basically in control of their own destiny. So they tend to be overbet by the public and, not great betting propositions. The favourite long shot bias is alive and well, covered this many times, and people don't believe it, but the horses that are favourites, that are hard in the market, they should actually be a little bit shorter compared to the amount that they win at, their win rate, as opposed to long shots. So you might think 15 to 1's a good price about the horse, and it might be in that isolated instance, but as a rule, that 15 to 1 shot should be a lot longer, whereas the, you know, the favoured horse, you know, even odds on horses should be a little bit shorter. So it goes against the way most people think, in that shorter prices can be value, but it's been proven over many years and in many different markets. Number 18, serious betting is now something like technological warfare. Once again, most of the successful guys we come across have some pretty switched on computer programmers, programming, databases and data that they've got access to. So, you know, it's gone from being able to, you know, watch a video or go to track work and get some extra information that way to being a lot closer to, you know, an IT battle. Level staking is for losers. Covered this so many times, so I hope I'm not wasting people's time. But if you think a horse at, you know, 10 to 1's got the same chances as an even money one, well, I don't think you understand the maths of punting, and there's no reason why you should stake that way either. You're far too reliant on horses that are at a bigger price winning for you, and you're not outlaying enough on the shorter price horses with a much greater winning probability. Number 20, don't be fooled into believing you've found a highly profitable approach, as positive variance can work in your favour. This is related to small sample sizes as well, but if you've done a little bit of research and you think you've found something that's fantastic, you'd want a little bit more data than just a small amount or a few weeks or anything like that, because there is variance that can happen in a positive way or a negative way, so you just need to be aware of that. And again, related to that, number 21 is statistically significant sample sizes are much larger than most people think. You know, you might have done some kind of research and you've monitored 100 bets and 20% profit on turnover, something like that, and you think, okay, this is it, I've finally found something. You need a lot more data than that to be confident. There are ways of measuring how much data you need to have that confidence, but as a rule, it's a lot more than what people think. Number 22, as a general rule, commentators have no clue and are best ignored. There are a couple of exceptions to this rule, but just your everyday journalist, commentator, if they were a little bit more successful at choosing horses and suggesting a staking strategy around them, they wouldn't be in that role. Really, the power or the way these guys can move the market if they really get behind one is far overblown and far exceeds their track record. But people listen to the story and swallow it and follow it. So that can be a good thing if it's a horse that's a little bit overhyped. But as a rule, people pay a lot too much attention to the commentators. Overbet trainers and jockeys tend to remain below average from a punting perspective. So, you know, there are some where if it's a mild form of being overbet, you know, that can correct itself over the longer term. But then there are others that just have a really high profile who are not great betting propositions. I've said again many times, but someone like David Hayes, he's had a good run since really settling into Euroa. Better run. But for many years, you know, big profile, big name, family dynasty, you know, successful in Hong Kong. People just assume that the David Hayes runner had a bit more potential or talent than what it really did, as a rule, again, as a group. So, you know, for many, many years, and there's many other examples of that. I just wanted to use him as one because it's very obvious. But, you know, certain people like him in jockey ranks, to someone like Corey Brown that has a high media profile and has ridden some big race winners for quite a number of years. He was seriously overrated by the market. Number 24 was betfairitis. Not everyone's heard this term, but you may have seen its effects, and that is when you like a horse, you know, say you've backed it at $3, and then in the last 2 minutes of betting, it gets out to $4.50 on Betfair. You don't even have to watch the race for those ones. They're not going to win probably 99 times out of 100. So there are some smart people on Betfair, some people that know a little bit more than others. And when you see one drift alarmingly, particularly in Sydney, less so in Victoria, that can be seriously detrimental to your punting health. Number 25 was in-depth analysis of trial form can be highly insightful. Now, for quite a long time, I didn't pay a lot of attention to trial form. You had your morning glories that couldn't always reproduce that on the track. But with the amount of video replays and just the data, like the trials data, the times from someone like Vince Accardi, there's a lot of value in the trials. The market tends to underrate unraced and first up runners. So if you can find the best of those, there's definitely an opportunity there, as we've shown through Dean with the Trial Spy service, which is must be about 8 months old now, and the bank's more than doubled. I think it's up 130 units. Number 26, speed maps are an essential tool for any serious punter. Once again, I think people start out doing the form as such, but not paying a lot of attention to how a race is going to pan out. Without knowing where your horse is going to be in the run or what the likely pace of the race is, you've just got your hands tied behind your back and you'll be needing a hell of a lot of luck to win. 27, the market underestimates first uppers, first starters and the quick backup. Long may this continue, but as a rule, maybe it's something to do with the fact that computer programs have a fair bit to do with the pricing or the market fluctuations these days, but they struggle to assess particularly first starters, because how do you weigh up a horse with no form versus the race brigade? First uppers, sometimes written off as being unfit, and also the quick backup. Horses racing again with within 7 to 10 days can have a really good record. I've heard a theory about that, in that in some ways it takes away the value or the skills of a trainer, in that if they're just backing it up after a short break, the horse is fit and firing. It really is not going to come down to having a particularly good trainer. The horse will be ready to go and ready to put in a peak run. Number 28, most professionals operate on low single digit profit on turnover. Again, when you're younger in this game, you think that all the pros must make 20, 30 cents on the dollar and just consistently win at a really high rate. That's very rarely true. I mean, you've got guys that only have a handful of bets each week that might achieve that rate, but most are on low single digits. Number 29, professional punting is more isolating than it is glamorous. Comes back to the work ethic that I mentioned earlier, and that's that you're not, well, most guys aren't even at the track these days, the way it is now with the online betting, that most guys operate from a home office or another office, and it's not particularly social. So that's what I'm saying, it's more isolating than it is glamorous. Number 30, boxed exotics are an inefficient method of betting. Relates to the the probability of the horse winning, but if you've assessed three horses at say $4, $6 and $8, well then you're saying the $4 chance has a 25% chance of winning the race, and an $8 is around about 12% chance of winning the race. So one's twice as likely as the other, yet you're basically putting them in together. So you're relying on the longer priced horse to get in the money for you to actually make a decent profit. Number 31, profitable edges become obsolete faster now than ever before. If you have found something that is highly profitable, great, but don't expect it to last forever. Again, that's been confirmed by quite a few people that I'm in contact with or come on the podcast. And I remember Elihu, who we mentioned before, he said that, I can't remember the exact numbers, but just in broad terms, if he's making 2 cents on the dollar now with, he has a lot of tennis bets, but say roughly 2 cents on the dollar, if he was betting his exact selections from his model 4 or 5 years ago, he would be making at least double that. But the market's become more efficient. And that's the same with someone like Dominic Byrne, who we spoke to, where, 20, 25 years ago, he was having guys watch trials at Kembla, and, he's got all kinds of stuff that he works on, which eventually feeds into the mainstream because it just doesn't last forever. Number 32, blindly backing a market mover after the move is just plain dumb. Spoken a few times that if you like a horse at $4, great, you backed it at $4.50. If it gets smashed into $3, a lot of guys jump on board, but the value is not at the $3, the value is at the $4.50. So they follow that move, they're in at the bottom of the market. You do back the occasional winner, you back a few winners, but you just don't come out in front. 33, casinos get rich on the collective ignorance of the gambler's fallacy. A lot of guys believe that they're due, so to speak. So they might think that there's four races into the card and all the favourites have got beaten, that the favourite is due. They might think that a jockey's ridden the first, famous jockey's ridden five or six races in a row, hasn't ridden a winner, so they're due, or they're at the casino and there's six blacks in a row, so that the red's due. That's all rubbish. So if you don't understand that, there's plenty of information on the blog that'll help guide you, or just Google gambler's fallacy. 34, if you don't know your edge, chances are you don't have one. I suppose that's a little bit like that poker saying where if you don't know who the fish or whoever the worst player at the table is, chances are that it's you. Number 35, it's about Murphy's Law. No doubt Murphy was a punter, as every new plan or strategy will start below expectations. Experienced that many times, where we will have the trials by service as a great track record of success, I'm pretty sure that the first weekend wasn't fantastic. Number 36, being a contrarian isn't easy, but it is essential. The only way to find value is by, I suppose, opposing the market. We've said that profit is perception minus reality. So you really need to be able to stand up for what you have developed, because there's going to be times where the market hates your selection, but you need to be able to have the courage of your convictions to push on anyway. So by being contrarian, you know, you need to oppose the market, because if you just flow with the market, once again, you'll back winners, you just won't finish in front. Number 37, to win long term, you must know something that the market does not, or have a better understanding of it. Like, if you're just backing a horse because you thought it won well last start, great. But that's not actually the secret to profits. The secret is having a more in-depth understanding of certain aspects of the form, because once again, if it's already baked into the cake, there's no profit there. Number 38 is, it's true that you can't eat value, but it's also a fact that you won't be able to be eating without it. And that is that you need to find value, you need to find overs, otherwise you won't be making a profit. So it's not about just backing winners. Anyone can do that, but it's about finding horses that are over their true chance of winning. 39 is, there's a huge business opportunity for a high volume, low margin corporate bookie in Australia. You see some overseas bookmakers that operate on tiny margins. I'm talking more about sports betting, whereas, you know, in Australia, there's no one that really does that. They all compete with their marketing budget, but less so on, you know, low margins. There's just a massive opportunity. If someone can get it right, particularly in the racing game, you know, the amount of people that have been limited or banned altogether, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people that have come straight back. So if they can come up with a model that works on a low margin, they'll kill it. Number 40 is, Hong Kong racing leads the way in so many ways. There's a love letter I've written to Hong Kong racing, but it's got so much going for it, it's frightening. I won't expand on that here. I have enough times in the past, but yeah, there's some excellent opportunities in Hong Kong, both for us as punters, but also for administrators to learn from. Number 41, the quaddie sub fast will probably last another 40 years. For some reason, they haven't been able to work out what to do in the case of late scratchings. And yeah, they don't seem to have any urgency to get it fixed either. So I'm sure that'll go on. The 42nd one, and yes, there were more than 40. I just said that old age must be kicking in. But it was, success is like being pregnant. Everyone congratulates you, but nobody knows how many times you were. And you can fill in the blanks. There's plenty of ups and downs along the way. So, you know, if people see someone that is highly successful now, they think that's the way they've always been. That's rarely the case. So, yeah, just think there's a lot to be said for hanging in there and pushing through certain barriers on the way to overall success. So hopefully that's been a reasonable episode. It won't be a normal thing for it just to be a one-man band. We'll get back to having the guests next week. So until then, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter, or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.